Community Life Church is not a building. We're a spiritual community, neither confined to or defined by its walls. This podcast is primarily for people who miss a Sunday gathering and want to hear the sermon. That's all that I have. But God has a message, and that's really what you need to hear. As you listen, hopefully you can catch the spirit of community life and hear the message, not just the sermon. That is, I'm not sure how old that hymn is, but that's a wonderful hymn. And they say the difference between a hymn and a gospel song is that hymns don't have choruses. That is a great chorus. So I guess, I'm not sure if it's a hymn or a gospel chorus, but it is a wonderful hymn, and it's a wonderful testimony. I'm not sure that anything feels quite so good, from my perspective, as being able to say, it is well with my soul. When I say that, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm not saying anything else but God, that God is good, and that God has my life held in his hands, and his righteousness becomes my righteousness. Not, I don't present myself as sufficient in terms of myself to be righteous, to merit God's love. I don't deserve any of that. But I am a beneficiary of that. The wonderful thing is every one of us who sits here today is the same. You are a beneficiary of God's wonderful love and grace. On the days when you are most disappointed in yourself, or you're most critical of yourself, or you feel like whatever it means to live a Christian life, that you're coming in somewhere underneath that bar that you may have set for yourself, on those days, God's love for you does not change. God's grace for you does not change. It is always that way. And when I think about the Christian life in that kind of context, I have a hard job thinking about it in terms of the oughts of life, right? The things you ought to do, or the things you shouldn't do, or all of that kind of stuff. I have to think of the Christian life in terms of a beautiful invitation that God gives us to be a part of his grace, and it brings to us peace, it brings to us freedom, it brings to us a way to see the world around us that is different when people don't fully understand that grace. I'm not talking about religion, but you know as much as I do how difficult it can be to just totally separate religion from a more pure perspective of faith and relationship. But this morning, I have been thinking about a verse in Philippians, and I'll put it on the screen here in a minute. And it's Philippians chapter 2. It starts with a section of verses that I won't read today, but it's that beautiful picture of God stooping to minister to us, Jesus being equal with God, but thinking that position was not something to be held onto or grasped, but he let go of that. He came down. He was downwardly mobile. Downwardly mobile, right? And so anyway, I'm really thankful for that. Philippians is called the Epistle of Joy, written from a prison cell. The Epistle of Joy written from a prison cell, and Paul's credentials, at least in that one epistle, deserve a hearing as he writes that book. And we'll go to those scripture verses in just a minute. But, you know, a person who suffers has a perspective on suffering that's worth hearing and worth listening to. And if you think about people in this room this morning who've gone through difficult times, I know several people today that I would go to if I faced particular difficulties, because they have something to say. They've been through it. And Paul, writing an epistle of joy from a prison cell, deserves to be heard. He has something to say about joy that has to be more than froth or just superficial kinds of stuff. In the middle of a prison cell, for a man to talk about joy, there has to be something real about that, I think. And so anyway, escapism is a title I've given to the sermon this morning. And the reason that I've been thinking about that is because faith can be like that. Faith can be like that. It can be about escaping things. Right? Accept Jesus so that you can escape hell. Come to Jesus so that you can escape the corruption in the world around us. Come to Jesus so that things will all work out right. Right? It can be really about escapism. It can be one of those things that that we think about in terms of running away from things, escaping some of the things that normal people have to go through. It is, however, the Christian life, I think it's a way in, not a way out. I think the Christian life is much more a way in than a way out. And I'll see if I can explain that. It's so hard to do sometimes to communicate what you want to communicate. But here are the verses. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but much more in my absence, that's character. When we do the right things, and there's no compulsion for us to do them except what is inside of us, that's character. When your life doesn't require supervision to make sure you do the right thing, when there's something, an internal guidance system that takes over, not, now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. That's not insecurity, but it means to give attention to things. John would have been mentioning that, I think, a little bit this morning, and the idea that we prepare for difficult times in life. We're wiser if we can make some preparations before they present themselves to us. And this is an incredible word of personal encouragement for me. For it is God who works in you. It is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. And this seems pretty simple. And I think the Christian life is pretty simple in many ways. Do everything without grumbling or arguing. Did you read that verse in there? Everything. Do you find, are Sunday mornings sometimes more difficult? I remember back to the times when we had little kids, getting little kids ready to go to church. It was much more difficult to be true to that admonition on Sunday mornings than other. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. Stars are beautiful. They're invisible in the daytime. And you know that what makes stars beautiful is the black and night sky around it. They talk about, Graham and Ann's a little different in some places because we have less light pollution. That's what they call it, right? A starry night is much better when there is no light pollution. The blacker the sky, the more brilliant the stars. And then I'll be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain. But even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. And here again, here's a man who's writing from prison, the Epistle of Joy. I was looking this morning for pictures of denominational publications. And when Jean came in, she had one that I just couldn't find a cover for, Jean. It's called Tidings, which is the missions magazine of the Atlantic Baptist Convention. So I defaulted to a former way of life and found the cover to a couple magazines, the Wesleyan Life. And we used to have to fill out on a yearly basis at the end of the year a form that indicated how faithful we were to the denomination. And I know the Wesleyans weren't alone in that, but one of the questions they used to ask us on the form was, have you subscribed to the Wesleyan Life? I think it was the worst magazine I've ever read in my life. And I never did subscribe to it. I could not bear to spend the money because what I struggled with is that we were recruiting people, their money, and asking for their time. We were trying to support a publication that would never have survived on its own. And I thought, there's so much about the church and about the Christian life that we get backwards in that way. And I think about what it means to follow Christ, what it means to be a servant of Christ, what church means. Church is not here as something to call for your support. Church is the people of God, and church exists to build people, to encourage people, to set people free. We ought to preach a message, and God help me, I want to preach that message, the kind of message that says, let me bless you to go and enjoy the life that God has given you, every minute of it. And we'll do everything we can do as a group of people to empower and support people in that, and we'll avoid doing anything unnecessary to draw you away from the world in which God intends you to live. We don't want to take you out of the world and make you so busy that you don't have time to live in the world. Because the Christian life, that's what it's about. It's a way in, not a way out. Programmatically, the church can keep people so busy that you really don't have time for anything else. And so to strike that balance and say, okay, what do we need to do as a church to set people free and avoid doing as a church so that we don't take them captive? And that's not always easy to do. So we have some meetings. We have a men's meeting once a week. We have a ladies' Bible study once a week. I think we're pretty minimal programmatically. We have a once-a-month roundtable meeting to try to avoid having any more business meetings than we need to have. And then every once in a while, there are other things. There's more that the church, there's always more that the church can do. I remember a point in my life where I really began to believe that Jesus was actually the vision for the church, and that we're all better off. We could fall in love with him. And I felt like the church we were serving at the time was, the problem wasn't that we were doing too little. The problem is that we were doing too much because people didn't have time to live. I don't think that it's at all constructive for the church to keep people so busy that they feel guilty when they can't be here. Even on Sunday mornings, that's the tension, isn't it? That's the tension. I think that the church right now is making its way to the hockey rink. But I would feel delighted. I feel so happy if you're here this morning because you think, you know what? I love the people who are part of my spiritual family, and I want to come on Sunday mornings because I believe somehow God has something to say to me. I don't want to miss it, and so I want to be there. That's the way it ought to be. The men decided we should cancel our meeting on February the 14th. So we could be with our spouses. A man should never feel, yeah, that's right, a man should never feel proud of that. You know, like men can be so stupid sometimes. But we had a vote, and the guy said, no, we need to be with our wives on Tuesday.
You had to have a vote?
Okay, moving right along. So it's not about supporting the denominational publication. It's not that kind of thing that Paul's talking about when he means to represent Christ the way we ought to represent Christ. It's not a schedule complication. Something else to do. The Christian life is not something else to do. It's not an addition to the end of your to-do list. So, you know, you tack on things like prayer or tack on things like devotions. That's not what it's about. It's not a schedule complication. A person should never say, I don't have time to be a Christian. Right? It is just not that. I want to share this little concept with you because I do think that this is an apt term for what it means to follow Christ. And I'm going to put a list of bullet points up on the screen here in a minute that are going to sound a little bit academic, but I think if you look at them and think about them and try to apply them to your life, I think they'll be meaningful. But this term, reality orientation, is what it means is that we adjust our behavior to come in line with our perception of reality. And a lot of that stuff we do unconsciously. So when you go to leave the room here today, you're not going to try to walk through that wall. It's not going to enter into any of your minds. You're not going to say, I think I'll just go that way this morning, because you have a perception of reality and there's an unconscious process that takes place in your mind, so you know, okay, if I want to get out of this room, I need to find a doorway. And you walk out through the doorway. That's really what that means. Our behavior is an expression of our perception of reality. So when you think about what it means to follow Christ, that's the question becomes, how real How real is Jesus in my life? How real is my faith? Is my faith real enough that it defines reality for me? It becomes my reality. It's not just some strange kind of fairy tale or myth or whatever, but I've come to grips with the fact that faith for me is my reality. Maybe the greatest reality is your faith and your relationship with Christ. Our behaviors an expression of our reality. There was a guy who used to write youth ministry books a lot of years ago. He was a long-term professor at Biola University, and his name was Larry Richards. And I read a lot of his stuff. He had so much to say in the day about youth ministry, but a lot of his writings way back then had a lot to say prophetically, if you will, about what the church ought to be today. And that's really what those bullet points are about. And I just want to go through them and see if I can pull some things out of them today that would speak to us about what it means to follow Christ, what it means to be stars in that black sky, to shine as we should. So, here we go. He talks about faith as life. He uses that term frequently in his writing. Faith as life. What does it mean to be a Christian? It means to live in the world, not to run away from it. Faith as life is best transferred by the more relational socialization model than the Sunday school model. We used to think for years that a real faith began with communicating information to people. And he talks about the way that we do that. He talks about something called cheap information cheap information and costly information. And what he says is cheap information is the information that you get when you're in school and the history teacher gets up and she says, Columbus discovered America in 1492, and you go, okay, sure, why not? You write it down, it's on a test, and it's information. Cheap information is information that doesn't cost you one thing. Costly information is something else. It does cost you something. So when we come together on Sunday mornings, it's pretty easy for me to say something on Sunday morning that will cost you something. I believe that, especially over a period of time, God changes us. He transforms us. All he asks from us is to trust him. He doesn't ask for you to change your behavior and then he'll become real to you. He just says, trust me. But beyond the shadow of a doubt, when you enter into a relationship with Christ, he changes us. We become different people. Just in the same way that a marriage relationship changes people. Makes them blind to the fact that when somebody shaves their whiskers, they... Faith is a relational thing, brothers and sisters. And that's why it's important to come together. Faith is a relation. It's not about sermons. Sermons can contain costly information. It requires something from you. And anyway, what the observation he makes is this. He said, the gospel is costly information, but we communicate it in a way that's designed to communicate cheap information. The most important thing when it comes to God working in our lives is the relationships that he chooses to work through to change us. Here's another one. I thought, wow, this is significant. The more relational home is a better environment to teach the faith than the church classroom. What I would paraphrase it and put it this way, that the home is contains the greatest likelihood of transmitting our faith to our kids. The home holds the primary likelihood of our kids accepting faith person at a personal level. The home is powerful. I can talk about this before at church. There's three homes that impacted my life. Herman and Edith Brown, in the hours that I spent at home with that family growing up, and I began to understand Christianity because of the relationships that I experienced in that home. And then Ron and Kay Morehouse, a pastor in North Head, they put games, ping pong table and little twist hockey thing in their basement. Our kids were in there every night of the week making noise, and I look back on it now and thought, how in the world did those people put up with that? But they did, and that home helped to transform my life. And then the other one was Alan and Hazel Swickers in Seal Cove. And that the doors were open, and we were there all the time. Those were my teenage years primarily down there. But God used homes to do a primary work in my life. Do you know, we call this God's house, and it may be in the same way that every other house belongs to God in the world. But you know, really, you know whose house this is? This is our house. This is our house. And it's a beautiful thing when we invite people to our house. This can be a home in its own way. The more relational home is a better environment to teach belief. A highly relational small group. We do have, I guess, the ladies group and the men's would be small groups, the best environment to learn the faith, and thus would be central to the church's ministry. I think that's true in our men's group. I can't speak for the ladies group, but I suspect it is. We showed up last week, and we never know exactly what's going to happen, but we had a young man come who was struggling in his life with some issues, and we began to share in different ways, and all of a sudden, he just shared, and we had this beautiful opportunity to encourage him. But that's a relational thing. People are changed in homes. The church is better off when it's a home, not a business. The church is better as an organism than an organization. It's about relationships. Church leaders should primarily be doing interpersonal work and interactive communication with the congregation as examples rather than primarily managing the programs of a church. Programs can get in the way of relationships. They really can. Doing one-way communication. This is not the way we do it here. This is not meant to be a one-way thing. But again, it's just to say that this is about relationships. And I love this. When I read this, I said, I've got to put this in my sermon because this is the way that we have chosen to do things here. Decision-making should be by consensus after interactive discussion rather than vote after minimal dialogue. Organizations have to use that process, and it's good. They would never get anything done if they didn't, right? But the church is not primarily an organization. The church is primarily an organism. In essence, people used to say to me, used to bug me, the church is a business. Let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. The church is not a business, and if it becomes a business, it's not a church. Someone said, if you mix manure and ice cream, it doesn't hurt the manure. In essence, the church may be business-like sometimes, the same way as an elephant is like a snake. I suppose you could say an elephant is like a snake because they got that wiggly thing, right? But you know, there's quite a bit of difference between an elephant and a snake. I'd never want to step on an elephant or a snake, really, but, well, it's not 100% true. But consensus, what consensus says is that everybody is important. Consensus says that what everybody thinks is important. The problem with just voting over things is it is a way for the majority to impose their will on the minority without necessarily hearing them. And sometimes those voices that are dissenting, those fewer voices that are dissenting, need to be heard and ciphered into things. Makes things slower here. We're still trying to figure out what to do with the boiler issue downstairs. We talked about that yesterday and what to do with heat, stuff like that in the future. And I think we're closer to figuring out what to do, but so far everything's working. And we'll figure it out, right? But consensus is a way that you say to every person, you are important. And I love that about our church. That's not anything of my doing. It's something that was done before. Ministry is primarily transactional and concerned with right relationships rather than right programs and structures. That means is that relationships will always take precedence over programs. You've probably never... Did you ever try to kill a program in a church that wasn't working anymore? I know of some real problems that have existed in churches because of an unwillingness to let go of programs that just don't serve the same kind of purpose anymore. I know of people who regularly would have chosen to fracture relationships and maintain programs. There's no program in this world that is more important than relationships, because that's what changes us. And then the curriculum of the church is not primarily about selecting the right content to convey, but structuring the right kinds of relationships for conveying faith as life. That is what it means to follow Jesus. It is faith as life. It is us trying to figure out how we can best fit one another to live as Christ would have us to live in the world around us. Anyway, what I think it's about is an embedded faith. I think it's about Christ being real enough in us that he ciphers into every activity that we're a part of, every relationship that we enter into, every time we have an opportunity to talk to a person or to conduct business. There is an opportunity there for us to do it in a way that God would have us to do it. An embedded faith. Our faith is designed to be lived out in an everyday setting. That is sometimes a pretty black, bleak world. It is sometimes a world that's not hospitable to what you believe. But that's where our faith is designed to live. Our faith is designed to live between Sundays. What makes our gatherings on Sundays more significant is what happens between Sundays. Our gathering on Sunday is a little bit more significant because last Tuesday night we had a chance to have a long talk with a guy who was trying to work through some things in his life. And that was where ministry really was done. That guy really would not benefit. If in the middle of that, here's what I'm going to do next time, Mark. Next time somebody comes in and they have something on their heart that's really weighing on them, and they want to share, I'll just say, just get your Bibles out and turn to Philippians chapter 2. There won't be any need of you talking. You could just listen to me. I'm going to preach you a sermon here now. And you know what? The sermon that I'm about to preach will take care of whatever agony or anguish it is that you're feeling right now. So you just listen to me. I'll fix that. Isn't there something that's less than what it ought to be? Something, you know, relationships do things that sermons can't. What do I mean by an embedded faith? I'm going to share a couple verses from the Old Testament that, to me, describe what I mean by an embedded faith. It contains the greatest commandment, these verses from the book of Deuteronomy. It just says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." And here's what Jesus quoted, the greatest commandment, and love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. The greatest commandment. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Not your heads, but on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them to your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. I think that an embedded faith is a faith that is at home 24/7 in your life. It's a 24/7 experience. It's not something else to do. It's not a denominational publication to subscribe to. It's something that changes your life and something that becomes so much a part of your life that it bleeds through in every experience, in every interaction, in every relationship. It's the church at large, right? It's the church. It's the church being the church scattered as much as the church is the church when it's gathered. It's the church being out there where it needs to be, the black night and shining the way God would have us to shine. So it's not about making you busier than you already are. It's understanding that you are busy and that where you go, God goes and the church goes. It's easier to preach the other kind of perspective, and it's easier to try to say to you, if you're really a faithful Christian, you'll be here every Sunday morning. And I like I say, I like that, and I love it when people show up. I love the fact that you're here this morning, but that's not really what church is about. Church is about us being there as much as it is us being here.